Pain is a prison for many. Pain from our bodies, necks, elbows, knees, and backs that cry out without rhyme or reason. Pain from a universe that seems intent on punishing us. Pain from the hungry ghosts of personal history. The pain of the past that insists on being ever present. Pain can be a teacher, but a harsh teacher whose instruction often remains mystifying. Pain is a constant companion for multitudes whose bodies refuse to relent in tormenting them. New science, thinking, and innovative practices are erasing the line between physical and emotional pain. But the predicament of pain demands radical thinking. I'm Jonathan with Limitless, and today I'm talking to a doctor who has made it his life's work to liberate the suffering from pain. Dr. Hanny Demian is a regenerative medicine pioneer, CEO of BioSpine, and a former trauma doctor whose work is transforming how we understand recovery. He's a hardcore biohacker himself, and he's actually going to answer some of our audience questions about pain at the end of this podcast. Dr. Demian, welcome.
Thanks a lot, Jonathan. Thanks for the kind words and the introduction. I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah. Before we get into the discussion, a really important call to action for the audience. You may not struggle with chronic pain, but you've probably got someone in your life who does. Someone you love or care about. Please don't underestimate the favor you might be doing with them, sharing this with them. Yeah, just grab the link wherever you're listening and send it to them in a private message or a text message. And you might be doing them a really big favor. So, Dr. Demian, do you hate the phrase pain management?
I do. It reflects some complacent to being in pain for the rest of your life. It's another word of, you know what, just live with it and move on. So I really hate that word. I think pain treatment and pain prevention should be the words that we're looking for in the future.
Yeah, it suggests a life sentence of pain, which I can't imagine anything worse.
Yeah, and I see patients come every day. I still practice heavily. And when I ask the patient what happened, oh, my family physician sent me here. They don't understand that, like you said, it's a life sentence. We're here for a long time. We're going to manage your pain so that you can live the bare minimum of your potential. Never reach your potential. This is what your life is going to be for the next period until something else happens. So it is kind of heavy word with our limit and limited understanding of chronic pain. It's been irritating for quite some time, and that's what actually drove me to do the work that I'm doing now.
And before we get practical, I got a bit of a philosophical musing for you. Is pain an intransient part of the human experience? If in the future, the science fiction technology of tomorrow can dissolve pain, both physical and emotional pain, would we somehow be spiritually poorer as a result?
I think this is a good sentence or a good concept to think about. And I think you are right. Pain is a part of life. it bring us more spiritual, mental strength. If you go through pain, whether it's mental or physical, you grow. You grow mentally, physically, and sometimes professionally as well, because it gives you this gratitude. And you think when the time was in the past, when you did not have pain. But yeah, this is a very, very strong concept. And I think you are right about that.
Okay. So let's get into your story some. But I wanted to get a more in-depth version of the story of what you witnessed there at American University in Cairo and how this galvanized your mission in life.
Yeah. So when I finished high school, my aspiration was to do business and have a business of my own. And I really didn't want to work for anybody in my life. Wanted to work for myself. I'm just a rebel this way. Very hard to follow instructions and orders. So I thought, you know what? Let's do business. So I went and applied for American University in Cairo, AUC. And it was downtown Cairo. And I was going there to apply. You get the application, you fill it, right? Old school. And I wouldn't tell you how long ago was that, but it was quite a long time. There's no internet. There's no application online. So you have to get the application yourself. And that day, it was a terrorist attack and was a bomb. And at the fence, at the gates of the AUC, it wasn't targeting the AUC, was, I think, targeting a political figure that usually passes every day from there. And unfortunately, it affected a lot of people there, a lot of death, a lot of body parts was going in there. They blocked the road. So I walked, wiggled my way through the crowds, and I went there. I wasn't afraid, but I really wanted to help. So I went in there and I started helping by just giving people water, whatnot, and getting things around and helping the ambulance, helping the police in there as much as we can, because they couldn't really control the whole area. There was a lot of blood, I remember, and a lot of scenes in there that just was really vicious for that time and at my age. But I didn't really shy away, and I went in. By the end of the day, I was tired, didn't eat all day, and was covered in blood and whatnot. And went home, I ripped the application for the business school.
You were covered in blood.
I was covered in blood from helping people and moving things around. Yeah, yeah. What if I was from the people that were helping to get to the ambulance and help them getting water and the help that they needed. Yeah.
Wow. That's gruesome. I've never witnessed anything like that. Yeah, those are like snapshots that are just going to remain vivid with you till the end.
It did. And I went that day and I realized that my real passion, I love business, but my real passion was helping people in need at their most vulnerable time. So I ripped the application and I applied for a medical school. And here we are. Years later, I did surgery. I did emergency department, which bring me all those visions for helping people, gun wounds, stab wounds, and whatnot. And honestly, it was just that time that you feel alive by really helping people, multiple ambulance, multiple victims, coming to the ER. This is what really made me who I am now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so yeah, so flash forward to your work at BioSpine. And as far as I can tell, you guys are on the leading edge of innovation with not pain management, but with pain healing there. How many patients would you say that you've worked with there?
Oh, at BioSpine, we almost had 120,000 patients so far since inception. I also have pain care clinics, which currently we have 250,000 patients we are currently helping. And let me go back to the story, Jonathan. It's really fascinating. I jumped into chronic pain from emergency because I got tired of just transient fix. I fix you for the day, you go home, I never see you again in emergency, which is great. Could be this is all what you need. But I want it more. I want to follow up your journey in healing and getting better and getting back to your activities and your life. So I went into chronic pain management. I did that for almost 20 years. And again, it wasn't enough. I felt handcuffed by the resources, by the treatment we have. So I decided, you know what? Why don't we go further? And what's the next step is surgery. But surgery was so aggressive and it just didn't give me the results that I wanted. So went to minimally invasive surgery. Minimally invasive surgery is it's a one day, and within few days you're back to your office or playing golf or activities or whatever you love. So I said, okay, minimally invasive would be the next step. And this is when we...
One day to getting back to playing golf?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the difference between traditional surgery, and I'm sure a lot of people don't have the experience and probably will never have the experience, I hope. But the traditional surgery for back surgery, it's 3-4 hour surgery, 5-6 inch incision, carving bones, muscles to get to the disc or the spinal cord, putting a lot of metal in there, whether screws, plates, while ours in BioSpy is 5 millimeter, done through an endoscope. And it takes 15 minutes to get to the disc or the spinal cord. We don't cut, we don't carve, we just space them out. Once we space them out, we get right where we need to be. And this is the surgery that will fix the herniated disc or bulging disc or a narrow spinal cord. Because we don't cut anything in our way to that, the healing is pretty fast. Using our regenerative medicine, right, which accelerates healing, the patient will be walking right after the surgery, after a couple of hours, and will be back to their activities by the next week. Patient can be golfing the next week. And that's really the power of what we're doing in the regenerative medicine. It just accelerating the recovery and trying not to interfere with the tissues, the bones, the muscles.
And so break down for me what regenerative medicine encompasses.
So regenerative medicine is quite unique. What is regenerative medicine? I got asked this question a lot. And I had a patient last week on a consult. She wanted to know the difference between anti-aging and regenerative medicine. Regenerative medicine is pretty simple. We believe, and it's been documented and researched extensively in the last few years, that the body can heal itself. But as we age, this healing powers decline. So how can we really push it a little bit further? We take the blood, or we take the stem cells. Right now, we take umbilical cord from a newborn baby cells, and we inject it in the injured area, whether it's injured, whether it's arthritis, trauma, or just wear and tear process. And that usually send bioactive proteins and healing factors, cytokines and whatnot. They go in and they promote the healing for this area. They ask the cells to act what there should be years ago in our youth. And with that being said, they start forming networks, they start releasing fibrin, and they start healing tendons, bones, muscles. This is what regenerative is. So we usually do that before the surgery. We inject in the area that we need to prep it for the surgery. After the surgery, we inject it again. Some surgeries we inject it during the surgery, and that promotes the healing right away. So we make the environment ready for healing after the surgery. And that's usually where the success comes. Sometimes actually we inject stem cells into the disc, into the area, and the incision, which really promotes the healing faster.
And does regenerative medicine encompass peptides also?
Yeah, so peptides, for those who don't know about peptides, it's amino acids. It's exactly like what you take before the gym, branched-chain amino acid, essential amino acid. The difference between peptides and proteins is proteins are 40 chains and above. Peptides are 15 and less. And they are amino acids attached together by a peptide. All the medicine that we've been doing in the Western medicine, we act on the outside of the cell, Jonathan. So if I give you a pill now for cholesterol, if I give you a pill for sugar, diabetes or whatever, it acts on the cell surface, which means that it alters the way the cell can work with another cell. Peptides are the only thing right now in medicine that go inside the cell and act on the mitochondria and the nucleus of the cell that alter the behavior of the cell from within. And when I say alter, it's not in a bad way. When I say alter the cell from inside, it heals the mitochondria and make it work as it should be. And it was supposed to work in the first place. So it works on the mitochondria and it heals the body from inside to outside. And yes, peptides help with regenerative medicine. If somebody's sick and you can inject their stem cells as much as you can, wouldn't have the whole healing and growth factors that we need. What if we prep those cells before? And this is where peptides come really handy. So we prep it. We usually give the patient a 60 to 90 days course of peptides. With those peptides, it prep the cells and really prime the growth and healing factors. Then you take the blood or the stem cells from bone marrow or from fat and inject them in this area. You see how generous the stem cells and how filled with growth factors and healing factors. So it's really prepping them. And as I said, it's what we call it, exciting the PRP. So we excite the PRP or the stem cells to act a little bit more than it should be.
Aha. So the peptides have a synergistic effect so that you're getting the maximum bang for the buck out of the stem cells.
That's right.
And okay, on your Instagram, you have some great shorts, like breaking down some just like little factoids of knowledge that people need about all this. And I think you had a short where you listed your favorite peptides. And I think they were BPC-157, TB-500, and then the GKU copper peptides. And then there might have been another one.
Yep. Yeah. I love now CGC-1295, apamorelin, which is growth hormone, releasing hormone, and releasing peptide. Unbelievable results with that. Unbelievable. Let me go back to the BPC. BPC is body protective compound 157. Again, it's 15 amino acid with 7 peptide chains. And this is why we call it BPC 157. And it is unbelievably, it's a miracle. It's a, what we call it, the Wolverine stack. And it helps recovery from as simple as the gym workout all the way to recovery from surgery and bad injuries. And TB works a little bit more because it works on the DNA and fixes the DNA. So it's more global for your cells. GHK copper is pretty amazing for collagen, aesthetics, hair, and skin, but it's also for collagen as well. We use it now for plastic surgery. We give the patient a month's worth before plastic surgery, and the collagen that they get and the healing is just unbelievable. Right? CGC is totally different. CGC and apamorelin, and tesamorelin, it's a 3-mix. It's really good for growth hormone release. So it's way different from people injecting growth hormone. And a trend was a few years back to have growth hormone, which is the fountain of youth or whatever. I never liked that because it's an external growth hormone. And as you know, anything that we take externally stop our system from producing it internally. But this one pushes your body to secrete internally. It's good for skin, for fat, for visceral fat, and prevention from cancer, prevention for heart and strokes. It's just unbelievable. And I've been on it now for 60 days and I will publish my results. But it's been researched really to death and it's just an amazing compound altogether to have it for longevity and regenerative. The healing is unbelievable with it, Jonathan. Like I had a cut from a knife and within a few hours, I couldn't even see the cut. It just, really? Yeah, it just unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Okay, here's what I'm curious, and I know some of our audience is going to be curious about. I've done meta-analyses, articles of a number of peptides, but I don't honestly recommend enthusiastically any of the vendors because I know that the peptide space is pretty polluted with like shoddy vendors that might not be selling you the real thing. I know that like people shouldn't really trust a certificate of analysis from a Chinese source peptides, but I know you are applying these at BioSpine. So how are you sourcing the peptides to make sure that you're getting the real thing?
I will go even beyond that, Jonathan. I'll go even, don't even use peptides with anybody or by yourself or online. We've done genetic testing recently and we use that all the time for our patients who want to use peptide for long term, not just the short term. But let me tell you something. One of the most sold medication in the market, which is Ozempic, is a peptide, right? And it's being used generously and prescribed generously by a lot of providers, right? But it actually could worsen thyroid cancer. It doesn't initiate thyroid cancer, but worsen thyroid cancer. I wouldn't feel good about prescribing Ozempic or Mounjaro or any of those drugs to somebody who's got the tendency or the genes for thyroid cancer, right? So genetic testing, having a provider that know what they're doing, is a start. Sourcing it, there's a lot of FDA-approved sources now, and we use it medically, right? Through a pharmacist here in the States, they have it medically, they have it tested, and they usually, when I start working with the pharmacy, I send it to a third party to test it as well, to see the purity and how it works in there, and what other ingredients in there, right? So we recommend working in a medical grade with a knowledgeable provider and from a reputable pharmacist. Otherwise, it's not really worth the risk. I've seen a lot of patients, especially at the gym, and fitness influencers have done a great job with that. But people can get sick really fast. And it can, because it promotes healing, it can promote cancer as well. So doing it without knowing or without the supervision of a doctor is very risky.
Yeah, peptides are kind of, as biohackers, we love to DIY things. I think there was the famous German physician and philosopher Albert Schweitzer. He said, the doctor of the future will be oneself. And so that's what a biohacker is. But peptides, at least the way that the consumer peptide industry is at present, it's kind of something that I've shied away from personally. I've got a bit of BPC-157, TB-500 in the fridge, but I haven't used it because I'm not 100% on the vendor that sent it to me.
Yeah, and you're totally correct about that. Buying it from an online source without being tested, not knowing what you should and should not do, is really a big mistake. And it just unfortunately is being really pushed and forced by fitness influencers. But going with a medical provider, there are a lot of knowledgeable providers. Let me tell you that I attended a peptide course for a peptide certification a couple of weeks ago. I've been attending them for the past few years. I think the first year we were like 25 and then 100. This year we're over 500 providers that get certified in peptide properly from all over, from Europe, North America, South America. So there are a lot of knowledgeable providers. I'd rather you go with a knowledgeable provider. But in any case, my recommendation is don't take it for long periods of time, right? I know it's a feel good. You can't stop it because you're recovering like literally like a Wolverine power. But if you're going to take it, I would take it for 60 days, 90 days and stop. And stop for 30 days and whatnot. That will give the body its time to heal and to recover from whatever it is. But again, source and providers are the main thing in this peptide.
And at BioSpine, you are diversifying some from just pain, and you're offering some like anti-aging longevity therapeutics. So can you tell us a little bit about that? I'm curious about what you're doing. I'm thinking things with red light, things with NAD boosting. Yeah, tell us a little bit about what you're doing there, and also how that connects with your own personal biohacking that you're doing.
So, Jonathan, it comes hand in hand, and the reason for all this could be quite personal, right? Let me tell you the story how all this started. So during COVID, right? And I was still working out, but I wasn't recovering as I used to. I used to recover really fast. Like I could get the toughest workout ever, right? And do stupid things, hurt my joints, my back and whatnot. And honestly, with a glass of milk and a couple of Tylenols, the next day I'm ready to go again. That wasn't the case during COVID. So I decided to look a little bit further. I tried almost every single post-workout on the market, glutamine, creatine, whatever you think of, wasn't helping. If I work out a push day with chest and shoulders or whatever, I'm sore for a week, right? I cut myself, I'm still bleeding 2 weeks after. It was really, really a life-changing experience. Then I decided to look a little bit closer. At that time, there was a lot of influencers started to talk about peptides, including Joe Rogan, including Peter Attia and Andrew Huberman. So I said, you know what? Let me start my own research in this. So I looked into it, and sure enough, I found BPC-157. So what I did, everybody else is doing. I went online and seen some reviews and started buying BPC-157, right? Within 90 days, I was a different person. I could push hard at the gym. Within 24 hours, I'm back to pushing again. It was incredible, the transformation within 90 days. I started telling everyone about it. Then I said, you know what? Let me look a little bit closer. So I looked into it, and I did TB as well, 500, which start influencers talk about it as well with BBC because it can cause global healing for the body. And then I said, you know what, let me do my own research. Then I decided to get certified, attend the courses, deep dive into it, and I start loving peptide altogether. I can't keep my mind from wondering about peptide. I was just reading a couple of days ago about a new peptide that will fix lactose intolerant patient. Can you imagine? It's just unbelievable. Just amino acids. So looked into it, get into the science, and I said, okay, that's good for regenerative medicine, but it took me beyond this to anti-aging. So going back to your question, anti-aging goes hand in hand. I fixed the patient back. How can we prevent this? What is actually causing him to have osteoarthritis or degenerative disc disease or his cartilage to wear out? All this goes down to inflammatory factors in our system. So the more inflammation you have, the more breakdown of the cells. So I decided to get into cellular medicine, which is a new subspecialty from regenerative medicine and anti-aging. So cellular medicine explains everything. Once we get to the age of 40, our cells start breaking down. They start not doing the job that they're supposed to do. So what caused this? Sugar, right? The more we eat sugar, right, it causes inflammation because we don't digest sugar as we're supposed to after 40. That's why people find it hard to lose weight and hard to gain muscles. So sugar, due to increased glucose sensitivity and the reduction in insulin the increase in insulin resistance, and the body starts breaking down. We don't, so we cannot deal with a lot of sugar. It sits in our system, sits in our cells, start breaking down mitochondria, slowing down. So what if we can reverse this, Jonathan? Right? How can we reverse this? This is when Ozempic starts shining, right? Because it lowers our appetite, but it does something beyond that. It actually stabilizes our glucose and insulin in our body during the day. So whatever you eat, it's still stable. It doesn't have the spikes that we get when we eat. Our sugar spike, then insulin spike, lower our blood sugar, and we get hungry and we eat again. So Ozempic does that. But the new generation, like tirzepatide, which is Mounjaro, go beyond that. It actually lower.
And I'm going to get the correct spelling of that from you, and I'm going to include it in the show notes below so that people can look that up. And I assume that's something that people can get at one of the BioSpine locations. Yes. Around the United States.
Yeah. Tirzepatide is quite unbelievable. Makes Ozempic almost obsolete, or semaglutide. It's dual action. What does that? What that actually do is lowering your appetite, but more than that, it lowers your visceral fat. So we don't end up with a fatty liver. If you end up with a fatty liver, which we all have, it's our natural storage. Like we all have this drawer in our kitchen that we store junk in it. This is our fat storage, and it can cause cancer. It can cause elevated in liver enzymes and slows down your system, right? So tirzepatide is one of the strongest, which unlocks keys for anti-aging, slows down inflammation, and increase longevity and anti-aging. So this is where it all started. So how come that we are just acting, like we said, on pain management? What if we go down to the root cause of the problem? And this will unlock the root cause of the problem. If we reduce inflammation, reduce our glucose intolerance, increase our insulin sensitivity, we can live long. With the peptide acting in and fixing our mitochondria, you will actually fix your DNA, and that usually causes us to live better and longer. So now we're getting into genomics, which is just unbelievable section that we're doing a lot of research in it in BioSpine. And this is how we tie it all together, Jonathan. We try regenerative medicine, which we treat chronic pain, whether it was traditional ways, and at the other extreme, surgical. We're trying to fill this gap between just managing. We are looking into treating the root cause of the problem, making the people healthy to reach their potential, and hopefully they will never need surgery at one point. But what if we can prevent all this together, Jonathan, by genomics? Genomics is the science of studying the DNA and how the genetics work together. So genetics, that everyone is familiar with, is study one gene. Genomics is studying all the genes of your body with the DNA and how they interact. They can unlock how you grow, how you develop, how you get sick, your health condition. And that's why we see a lot of families that have the same genomics have back pain or have early osteoarthritis or even white hair. So there's a lot of work that's been done trying to unlock this potential and help people prevent getting sick and prevent getting chronic pain.
Okay, so I have to admit, I was getting a little bit uncomfortable as you were describing the evils of sugar, because I am 40 years old and I enjoy dark chocolate and red wine, a glass of red wine with dinner, you know, on pretty much a daily basis. And so I'm getting some sugar there for sure. And I know that, and I'm still very slim. Although I do fasting and exercise and a lot of other things, I'll use NAD boosters so that I'm keeping my insulin response optimized, hopefully. Do you think, okay, are you categorically anti-sugar? Do you think a person like me needs something like tirzepatide? And I'm going to learn to pronounce that correctly, I hope, eventually. Or is someone like me okay with that indulgence of, say, dark chocolate and red wine, as long as they are doing other, shall we say, mainstream biohacking things to keep their insulin response in line?
You nailed it, Jonathan. So, like I always say, right? Remember, my background is Egyptian. We probably invented sugar at one point from sugar cane. So I'm not against sugar and I love sugar. But sugar in excess is really hard to digest, right? And let me tell you what I used to do. I used to get one of those M&M bags and take it to bed. And by morning it was done. Don't remember how it's done, but yeah. My birthday gifts from my friends wasn't alcohol, was the big, huge chocolate bar that you got from the whole store and Costco and all those stores, which is like 2-3 pounds of Toblerone chocolate. So that was indulging, not a little bit of chocolate, right? And I used to work out, but not as much as I should be. So everything has got a price. If you enjoy a little bit of sugar and wine, sure. If you're right, it's enjoy it. When I travel, it's part of the experience. I indulge in sugar and desserts when I travel, right? But I don't do it on a regular basis, and you're going to have to pay the price. So exercise is the thing. Doing all the biohacking through NAD, NAD, and other supplements is very important to equalize your indulgence, right? So if you do this, you have to commit to exercising and other lifestyle activities and biohacking that will neutralize this. So you end up with a zero effect, right? What I'm talking about is the people that indulge, but they have a little bit of discipline to do all this. When this happens, it just unfortunately will break down. And we've seen it over and over again, right? You're slim, so you really have a good metabolism, which it's a privilege not everyone has. And you're disciplined by doing all this, right? So I don't think a glass of wine and a piece of chocolate will affect you at all, right? So at the end, you probably end up in the negative and you probably end up in a in a calorie deficit, right? Which is, this is all what you need to do. You just need to know how your body reacts. And if you see yourself, okay, I'm gaining weight or my metabolism is slowing down, I need to slow down or increase my activity. Because all what it is just calories in, calories out, sugar in, sugar out.
Okay, I'm happy to hear that I can keep my red wine and dark chocolate. Last time we talked some about AI, and we sure hear a lot these days about AI integration in healthcare, and many people are understandably skeptical of AI's role in healing. Does it have a role, do you think?
AI is coming, and I just finished a course in MIT about AI in healthcare, and it's quite fascinating. AI will be a tool like stethoscope, like a hammer for reflexes, And it will help us absorb a lot of data and make sense of it to reach a proper diagnosis and an accurate treatment. Would it be doing the procedure itself at one point? I don't think so. Would it be face forward and facing the patient telling you what to do and what not to do? I really don't think so. There is a lot of factors in there that will affect that, which is the human interaction to start with. But what they're doing with AI, Jonathan, is just really impressive. Because for me, for something simple as an MRI report, I will take the MRI report and say, okay, this is mild, moderate, and severe case of arthritis, right? If I look at that, my human eye will miss a lot of variation because the human body is not just mild, moderate, and severe. There are way grades and way shades of gray into that picture. AI can take this, analyze it, and will be able to tell you, yes, it is mild, but it's very close to being moderate if the patient continue doing this. It will be very close to severe if the patient didn't lose weight, didn't do this, didn't treat themselves, didn't follow certain protocols. So that's number one. We'll take all this data that human eye wouldn't be able to pick up, but also add to this, we'll analyze it and we'll reach a really good prediction that will open the eye of the provider or the physician to the possibilities of other treatment. Then you enter this all in the AI and we'll give you the best treatment possible for this patient. That will go beyond just, you know what, Jonathan, take this medication. I will see you in a week or two or whatever. No, it will be according to your age, according to your weight, height, habits, all this. This is what you need to do. So it would be really more accurate into that sense. But doing procedures and really talking to the patient, I don't think it's going to happen. We really need the human interaction. Because as they admitted in the course that AI is really primitive and it can make mistakes. It only acts on the data that you put in. And if the data is not correct or it's not enough, what comes out is not correct and not enough as well. That's a privilege and this is an advantage humans will always have over AI. We can make mistakes, but it's not about that. It's about seeing the patient as a comprehensive, as a full picture and not just an injury or shoulder pain or a back pain.
I'm assuming that with AI that you do cross-referencing of your genomics data from the patients with the AI. And I'm wondering if there's like some surprising findings that have come out of that.
It's unbelievable, and you're absolutely correct. That's exactly what we're doing, and we're feeding information now as much as we can. And that analytics coming out on the other side is unbelievable. There are stuff that you will notice, and it's a lot like weather, right? Some people they don't do well, and their arthritis is not well in humid or rainy weather. There are certain foods that if people just avoid will help more. But it goes beyond that. It goes into the expressive phase of the DNA. There is a process called methylation, and a lot of people heard about methylene blue and methylation and IV methylation, which is actually the process by which cancer can grow and cells can express cancer or turn off cancer altogether. And unfortunately, after a certain age, our ability to do this slows down. That's why you see a lot of cancers in an older age or second half of our lives, you see cancers. Not that it doesn't happen in earlier age, but it's just mostly in the second half. We're more susceptible because this methylation process slows down, right? So we're looking really closely into this and the relationship with conditions like osteoarthritis and back pain and degenerative disc disease. Why would the discs in my back wear out faster than yours? Is it just the style of life that I'm leading, or it's more than that. So through AI, we're trying to collect this data, and the results, as I said, are just unbelievable to see that a lot of factors goes into this, from as simple as drinking water, exercising, being exposed to sun, and so forth. And hopefully we'll get to the point that we will understand how we can increase methylation and hopefully prevent chronic conditions like chronic pain.
Let me ask you a kind of relational sort of question. There's going to be people listening to this who have a loved one, mom, dad, uncle, who are really suffering from chronic pain, but they are just stubborn as hell. And they don't want to change their lifestyle. They maybe are willing to go to the mainstream doctor. They're maybe willing to go to the doctor that their insurance covers, but they are in pain and they're stubborn as hell when it comes to new the kinds of things that will actually help them. And this puts the whole family in this really frustrating situation. I'm wondering if you have kind of some persuasion skills that you guys employ there when you're trying to convince a person to take a chance on some healing modality that they've never heard of before. And they also don't want to change their lifestyle.
Funny you say that, because my mom and dad are the same thing. They are old school. They don't like changing anything. They don't like invasive treatment. My dad was complaining of his vision for quite some time, took him to the eye doctor, and sure enough, he's got full-blown cataracts. Went to the surgeon, and he refused to do the surgery for years. He said, no, I can see enough, right? No, you can't see much. And it took me a while to convince him. Same with the prostate and whatnot. So I'll tell you what I did to my mom. So I started her, right, because she refused everything. She refused injections, she refused supplements, and so forth. So I decided to give her a gift as one of those wearables, right? I said, you know what? That will track your heart rate, will track your sleep, steps, and whatnot. She said, okay, fine, I'll wear it. And I can monitor this on my phone. Looking at her, she's not sleeping well. She's not walking much. Heart rate is really high. So when you put this data in front of them, things will settle a little bit. They will get to the point that, okay, we can go forward. We cannot go much more if my heart rate, resting heart rate is 100, right? And my blood pressure. And one of those, like the Whoop, can measure, can do an ECG on the spot, right? So looking at that was heart rate, blood pressure, whatnot. They know that this is a risk. And nobody wants to die, but I think it's fear from doing anything different and just being comfortable is the way. Because I asked my dad is a physician, why you don't want to do cataracts, right? And he said, what if something went wrong? At least now I can see, right? Not 20/20, but I see something. If something went bad, I will go blind in this eye. And sure enough, it is fear. And I've seen this a lot with a lot of my older patients. It's just the fear of change or fear of something get worse. I can get by like this. It's better than nothing, right? And it's understandable. So slowly, slowly, we start to change my mom. I asked her to walk. Then we realized she's got hip and knee pain. She refused injections and stem cells and PRP, so I started her on peptides. Now she can walk more. Her heart rate went down, weight went down, and start slowly getting into shape, right? So you're never going to be able to change them all at once, Jonathan. You're just going to have to know them and take the time, understand what the fear, and it's almost guaranteed it's the fear that hold them back, right? The fear of something. You're going to have to uncover this. And it all falls to a skill or a negotiation or whatnot that you can discuss with them how and why they are scared. Once you uncover this, they will be amenable to change. And it happened with me and my mom. My mom is old school. She wouldn't take pills. She wouldn't take injections. I have to bring the lab 3 times a year to do her blood work at home, right? Otherwise, she wouldn't go. So
you had to be as persistent as she was stubborn.
Yes. Yes, because I know if she continued doing that, what will happen. And she loves her grandkids and want to live longer. Nobody wants to die early, right? Live longer to enjoy them and see them growing up. And that slowly will change.
So empathetic listening, focusing on the area of their fear of the unknown.
Yes. Yes. And I just attended an FBI negotiation course. It's called Tactical Empathy by Chris Voss. And it's exactly the same. You get to understand. And once you uncover the main reason, they will be amenable to change.
And I believe his hack is repeat last 3 words.
Yes, lights, mirror. Yes.
That one works scary good. Is they express their worry or whatever. And then you don't have to get real complicated with Jedi mind trick persuasion hack. You just repeat last 3 words and then maybe buy them a whoop.
Yeah.
That works. Yeah, because sometimes data can be, that personal data can be convincing.
Yep.
Okay, so there was a book I read a while back, and it was on the EFT, the emotional freedom techniques, where you're doing the tapping thing. I forget the exact pattern. And the premise is that a significant proportion of the chronic pain that people deal with, it has a emotional root attached to an event, that they had a bad breakup or they lost their job or divorce or whatever. And then those unprocessed emotions manifested as pain. Is that, and I think this book was suggesting that that is like always the case. They were suggesting that you could resolve almost any pain with EFT type techniques. I'm wondering how that lines up with what you've observed over the course of serving hundreds of thousands of patients.
I heard about this technique, and it's actually true, but I wouldn't say 100%, Jonathan. I would say a good portion. Cannot quantify it, but a lot. I've seen it mostly in motor vehicle accident victims. They get into this loop of unfairness, right? It's unfair what happened to me. Why me? It's like, I've seen a lot of judges, lawyers, successful entrepreneurs get into car accident and their life changes, right? So you get into that cycle of unfairness, and that will bring a lot of emotions, negative emotions that will affect their pain significantly. You can do whatever you can to them and they will not get better. They will not get better. They will continue having pain. They will end up probably with all over body pain, fibromyalgia, chronic pain syndrome, which is very hard to deal with. And then once you get to that spot, you have mentally and through techniques like EFT, be able to reverse that. We've treated a lot of them. Actually, BioSpine has a good group of those. You can do whatever you want, even surgery, and they wouldn't get better. But there are people that want to get better, right? There are people that will have an injury, but they would like to push through, right? Like athletes, like influencers, like high active driven patients, right? So this technique will work. Other techniques will work as well. But I think treating underlying condition and the root cause, which is definitely emotion, will be a big part of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I keep having this thought. It sounds like everything you do at BioSpine sounds amazing and also expensive. So I'm wondering if you need to be like one of those Florida Bitcoin millionaires to afford to go to BioSpine.
Not at all, right? And this is the myth that we're trying to bunk, Jonathan, that regenerative medicine is for the rich and wealthy and celebrities. Not at all. We're trying really to bring this to mainstream. And I always say that, especially in my social media, we need to bring this to mainstream. Right? I know it's interconnected. I know things are not covered by Medicare or insurance and whatnot, but we are lowering the prices as much as we can. We're getting as much help from the community, we're getting as much help from our doctors to really bring this down to the bare minimum or a cost at some times. And we do a lot of cases for free out of our non-for-profit and charity organization because we really need to bring this to mainstream. My hope is to bring this technology. My hope is to bring this algorithms and pathways and all those protocols to people in the mainstream, whether it's peptide or anti-aging or regenerative or stem cells. We're really hoping to bring it to mainstream because this is when things are going to get better. This is where we see a new alternate way of treating patient medicine. I was attending, like I said, the course for peptides, and I look at it as this is a new kind of medicine that we will be witnessing in the next few years. They're treating MS, they're treating Alzheimer, concussions, lactose intolerance with peptides, right? If we'll be able to prove this, who knows, maybe one day this will be covered by insurance, which is way better, right? Wouldn't you think it would be way better than treating or preventing the condition than going into surgeries and thousands of dollars spent in hospitals?
Yeah, that would be a game changer. So let's talk about prevention some for people that aren't in pain. I wanted to find out from you what the low-hanging fruit hacks are for preventing chronic pain. Personally, as you can see, I use a standing desk. That's why I shift back and forth because yeah. I want to stay moving throughout the day. So I'm avoiding the sedentary lifestyle. I get some exercise, not a ton as a new dad, but I get some exercise. I use a red light therapy device at least a couple of weeks. I have a mindfulness practice so that I'm not bottling up a bunch of negative emotions. And I take some anti-inflammatory supplements. Am I like pretty well handled in the chronic pain prevention department?
You are doing great and you nailed it on the head, Jonathan, again. So yes, being proactive is the way to go, right? And I'm sure you have a busy schedule, but stand up desk is quite amazing. Eating healthy, going in the sun, going in the outside is very important. Drinking water is extremely important. People really minimize the role of drinking water in our life. Exercising is quite amazing. There are supplements that we cannot ignore as well, right? You have the multivitamin, but deep inside, what about zinc for immunity, right? What about NAD for energy? And people heard about NAD. Let me break it down. Deep inside our cell, we have a machine that burns energy to give energy to all the systems, organs, and whatnot. This machine needs NAD. It's called the Krebs cycle. And this NAD is the fuel. Without NAD, you lack energy. You're fatigued. Your brain wouldn't work. Your heart wouldn't work. So NAD is quite important. Right? NAC as well is quite important for regeneration of the DNA. If we don't take this stuff, how do you think your cells are going to regenerate? So all what I'm saying is give your body and the cells the ingredients that they need to stay healthy. Multivitamin, you can get this through supplements or just eating healthy with fruit, vegetables, meat, amino acids, whatnot. Enough proteins in your system. And this is what I'm doing in my new book. I think this process should start at childhood, right? Anti-aging, to stay healthy. So what should you do at each stage of your life? In childhood, just eat your protein, vegetables, and fruit and exercise. I'm not asking for anything more than that, right? When you get a little bit older in your teens, what about taking a little bit more supplement like zinc, calcium, vitamin C, vitamin D, and spend some time in the sun? What about our 20s? When you start getting into university, college, or even start working, okay, we're going to have to increase our proteins and exercise a little bit more. What about our 30s? Okay, you start to slow down. After 35, we know that you lose muscle mass, so you need to exercise a little bit more. Make sure that you're aware of your muscle mass. Increase your protein and start lowering your carbs and fat, especially the bad ones, because this is the time when the fats start accumulating in our blood vessels, causing atherosclerosis and heart condition, right? What about our 40s? Okay, now we need to get serious about sugar, glucose, and insulin, right? What about having some supplements that will keep our insulin and sugar stable during the day? So we add a little bit more supplements, right? So anti-aging and regeneration starts at early age, Jonathan. If we will have this checklist, right, and its main supplement, you can get it over the counter. I think peptide will be available in the next few years, honestly, Jonathan, in a drink, like the electrolyte drink that you grab from a gas station, right? Mm-hmm. It will have peptides that it will come to the point, because I understand that most of them now are injectable and not a lot of people are willing to poke themselves. But in the next few years, it will be available in a protein bar or gym supplement or water that you can grab, right? So being healthy, it doesn't need a lot of work. And I'm totally against what Brian Johnson, the guy who never dies, do. It's a lot, right? Not exposing to the sun, drinking water, and having a million supplement a day. I think that just an overkill. Me as a physician, me as a person, I wouldn't do that. I studied this protocol and it's definitely valid, but just too much, right? It's just too much for somebody to eat all those pills in the day and have all this checklist. So we're trying to come up with a bare minimum biohacks that people can do depending on their age and their stage of life, and to live healthy. And like I always say, Jonathan, we're not trying to be immortal and we're not adding years to your life. We're adding life to every year you live.
And I didn't know you had a book coming out. What is that going to be entitled?
We haven't figured out the title yet, but it will be the supplements, the bare minimum supplements that you need to have all stages of the life of your life to live healthy. So as I said, it starts from childhood. So people will take it, or parents will take it and start following that for their kids. And the way I'm trying to write this book is about as simple as it could be and as effective and mainstream it could be. It's a checklist. It's a no-brainer. You follow the instruction in the book, right? You don't need to do anything else or anything beyond that.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know when you have that book, when that comes out, and I will read it. And if you want some advice, I can maybe help you come up with a more clickbaity title.
I would love that. I would love that. I have hard time with finding great names or clickbaiting titles. Yeah.
Yeah. You got to come up with a good clickbaity title with a book. There was a book on genetics that I read, and the title was Why Hitler Rose, the Soviet Union Fell, and My Sister Stole My Mother's Boyfriend. And I said, I need to read this book. I need to read this book. So yeah, you got to pay attention to those titles. Okay. Next, let's get into a couple of questions that I got from my audience, because I announced that I was talking to one of the most knowledgeable people in the world about pain. And we got some questions. Peter asked, why do people have different pain thresholds?
That all depend on the nerve endings, Jonathan. So without going back to genetics and genomics, it's usually nerve endings. Some people, and it's not only this, we've done a research recently into cultures and ethnicity, and they have more pain sensitivity than others. So let me tell you what the research is, that Black people are more sensitive to pain than Caucasians and other ethnicity, right? Why? Because we find that the nerve endings have certain chemicals, certain enzymes that transmit pain faster and with high intensity. That being said, they don't get fibromyalgia as much as Caucasians and other ethnicity. So we looked into this, that their pain signals and pain and nerve endings are buried a little bit deeper in the tissues, right? So they're sensitive, they're more potent, but they're buried a little bit deeper than other ethnicity. So it all depends on the nerve endings. There are chemicals in there that take the message of pain and send it to the nerve endings and go all the way in the spinal cord and into the brain. This is where it is. There is a recent study showed that the pain area that feels the pain in the brain is a little bit bigger in other individuals. That usually comes from backgrounds, right? Which means that what kind of job you did, what kind of exercise you've done, how many accidents you get into it, and how big this area will get. Funny enough that they found that women, before having kids, this area is really small. If you go to natural labor, right, this area gets big. So the same person pain feeling and sensitivity can change from before labor to after labor just by going through the trauma or the time of labor.
Okay, next question. People with chronic pain often develop hypersensitivity to pain, supposedly due to nerve pathways being overstimulated. Is this condition reversible?
It's called allodynia. And I have patients that couldn't even wear clothes at one point, couldn't wear shoes, Jonathan. And I have patients, especially if he made patients, couldn't even wear undergarment or bras after because of the pain. It is reversible. It is very possible to reverse it. We usually now we use methylene blue to reduce the inflammation. We use BPC 157 and TB 500. It has to be a higher dose, and it has to be for 90 days straight, right? The main idea is avoid during this period any new signals for pain. So try as much as you can. Be careful not to hit your head, not to get into car accident, not to climb ladders, not to go to the gym and do something extensive, because that will reverse and will really stop the treatment from working. But only those three can reverse the allodynia.
Methylene blue is pretty mind-blowing stuff. Do you administer it orally or intravenously?
Both. We do IV once a week for 4 weeks, but in the middle, we give the patient oral supplements as well.
Okay. There's a pretty good joke in there about bringing methylene blue to a nudist colony and perhaps assuaging people's suffering, and then they can put their clothes back on.
Yeah. We had a speaker at the conference, at a peptide conference, and he went to the bathroom and came back. I said, hey, a lot of people are on methylene blue because it turns your pee blue. So the whole bathroom was blue, right? It's a really good supplement. Again, I wouldn't suggest people taking it for a long time. In a cycle will be perfect, because all this is new and we don't know what we are getting into it, but give the body time to heal. 3 months is good enough. Stop and then start again after 3 months.
Okay. Next question. Johnny asked, how much measurably can the sheer force of will or the influence of one's mind have an effect on the body's pain response? And can the force of will even override and mitigate the physical damage beyond just pain?
It can.
I think maybe he's kind of alluding to, there's Dr. Joe Dispenza, for example, has done all this research on all this. He's done so much in this area of what we could kind of call like faith healing, which is that we can perhaps yield the placebo effect internally to fix our bodies. And you hear all sorts of fantastic stories about this on the internet. But if that really worked, why are so many people suffering from chronic pain when 95% of people have some kind of faith?
Yeah. I've listened to Jordan Peterson. Yeah, Jordan Peterson were talking about that and pain as well, and he was trying to figure out why the same. As we all know, or people who listen to Jordan Peterson, he's very spiritual, and I think he's very religious as well. But anyway, pain is quite complicated. It comes from a lot of factors. Some of it is mentally, spiritually, and physically. Physically, people have a pathology that can cause significant pain, and the pain will alter their life forever, right? Unfortunately, that will affect again the mental, the spiritual factors as well in their mind, right? Controlling pain through faith is a very good concept, and I think it will work. But I don't think it will work in 100% of chronic pain. It just, unfortunately, it will lower the pain. It will lower our interpretation of pain, right? But it wouldn't take the pain away, right? I've seen it a lot. I've seen it a lot with my patients. I've seen it a lot. I'm very spiritual and religious as well, right? But when you get pain, the only thing that will deal with this is treating the pain. And like I said before, if I have a patient and they're so hungry, right, and they are in pain, the only thing he will ask you is just take the pain away. He wouldn't care about food. He wouldn't care about water. He will care about taking the pain. And I think pain treatment should be a human right for everyone, right? We should be able to treat pain. It's one of like our human rights to be living in no pain, right? But going after faith only will, unfortunately, block our eyes, give us a huge blind spot of what actually pain is, which is multifactorial. Faith is one of them, for sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old parable of like the man who's stuck out at sea on the boat and he prays to God to rescue him, and then the three boats come by that can rescue him, and he says, no, God's gonna save me. I don't need you to rescue me. And then he dies and goes to heaven, and God says, I sent you three boats, guy.
I agree. Yes.
Okay, as we draw towards our conclusion here, I wanted to get into some fringe stuff with you.
Tell me.
So okay, I wrote a science fiction novel about biohacking, and it's set in the near future. And in the novel, the protagonist gets injured and goes into a high-end clinic where he gets injected with stem cell therapy and nanobot therapy. Is this pure science fiction, or will like nanobot therapy be a thing one day?
It will be a thing. And you're not far off, Jonathan. And like I always say, when I watched Back to the Future movies years ago, that was science fiction. And we said, yeah, it's never going to happen. Right? Right now, we're way beyond the science that was in Back to the Future. No, it will happen. It will come to the point that we will be injecting stem cells, peptides, right? And nanotechnology to actually fix the human. But we will be using it not for treatment, but for prevention as well. To alter our DNA that stopped working or broken or causing cancers, and to get to the point that we will be fixing this. We will bringing back people from Alzheimer, right? Can you imagine that? The family member that people lose for Alzheimer, right? We can bring them back with all their memories and their personality. We'll be bringing back people from ALS, MS, and other chronic conditions. But we will be preventing cancer. And I hope that we will continue pushing this against a lot of pharmaceutical or whatnot that try to say that, no, that's not going to work. It is possible. And every time I attend one of those courses, I see we are getting closer to having treatment for a lot of chronic condition, not managing, treating.
There was a thing that we talked about the first time we spoke. We talked about the opioid crisis in the United States, this catastrophic crisis that has just devoured so many lives. And I have not been in the United States for quite a while, so I've kind of missed this. But I watched a really good mini series that was called Dope Sick about the opioid crisis. And in fact, I'll link people to that because it was really good television. And what struck me watching this show was how the opioid crisis has wrecked the lives of so many people who were not like degenerate drug addicts. They were just like normal people that threw out their back helping a friend move or something. And then this turned into this incredibly destructive addiction. I was wondering, going really big, large scale, I was wondering what your thoughts are on healing the opioid crisis.
We suffer this opioid crisis in the States, Canada, and I'm sure in other countries. The reason being is, in my opinion, unprepared physicians for treating chronic pain, unqualified, unfortunately. Because believe it or not, we don't study chronic pain in medical school. And in the past, there was a lecture or two about chronic pain, and that's it, right? And then shipping the family physicians or GPs out to their clinics and the world with very little knowledge, you'll be faced with almost 70% of patient visits with chronic pain. And in the ER, these numbers can go way higher than that for pain generally, right? So the easy part was, you know what, just take those Percocets or Oxys or whatever, and you get better next, right? And you'll be dealing with a life-threatening condition or a patient that you have to go and do a CPR on, and you have a patient with a twisted ankle. What are you going to do? You're going to get an x-ray or whatever, making sure it's not broken. Give them some Percocets or Oxy, because this is all what you're taught in medical school, and then send them off. Unfortunately, this ended up with a huge population of dependent, because number one, it takes the pain away. But all other than that, it actually, that's why they call it perks. It actually put you in a good mood and get you a little high and make you don't care, right? With all the stress in the world, this is all what you need. You need to avoid pain, avoid reality, right? And be as calm as possible or as high as possible just to face life, go to work, or be with your family without pain, right? And that's how that pandemic started. I believe it started with physicians, easy way out, being lazy as a physician, and then the patient got used to it. And we've seen a lot of people. We've seen Elvis Presley getting hooked up in Percocets and dying because of that. We've seen a lot of celebrities, right? A lot of functional people that get into this habit with a little bit of personality traits that depending on this or taking the easy way out, because as humans, this is what we do, right? It ended up in a pandemic. I believe it is reversible. It is reversible with science, with teaching, number one, teaching our doctors in the undergrad, postgrad about chronic pain properly, how to treat it properly, how to treat the cause of the problem, not just mask it. That will be the first step. Number two, there are a lot of ways out now from this. Don't prescribe it. And if even if you prescribe it, there are peptides that will take the pain away. There are procedures that will take the pain away, right? We faced this quite hard years ago, and we said, no, we're not prescribing anymore, but we have other options through injections, through treatment that will help you relieve the pain and slowly, slowly take away the pain. There will be no with good education, with good podcasts like yours, spreading the word that there are other alternatives. Education is the main for providers, for patients, for general public, will be the mainstream. There will be the main way or step in the right direction. So I think this is the way to reverse opioid crisis and never see it again.
And maybe one day there'll be a peptide that helps to reverse the opioid dependency. I wouldn't be surprised.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. If we are able to treat lactose intolerance, which is a huge problem, if we're looking into treating peanut allergy now with peptides, Jonathan, I think we'll find a way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll keep an eye out for that. Okay, so as a final call to action for the listeners, again, if you are not suffering from pain, then thank God, have a moment of gratitude for that. But you probably have someone in your life that does struggle with chronic pain. So please share this with them, because you might really like the happy person that they can become when they put their pain behind them. And then, Dr. Damien, let us know where in the United States, where the majority of our listeners are, where the BioSpines are located.
We are across Florida. Right now, we're in 7 cities, and we're expanding further in Florida. But we will be soon next year in New York. We'll be in Michigan, and we'll expand from there. We're in Canada by summer next year. We're hoping to go all the way to Dubai as well after that. But I am always available on social media. DM me at Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, at Dr. Hani Damien, or at my website at drdamien.com. And I always answer. I'm always up for a challenge. I'm always up for questions. And I really would like to spread all the good work to the mainstream.
That's hugely generous of you to respond to anyone that DMs you. I hope that's not a thing where you get so many DMs that eventually you have to replace yourself with AI to respond to those DMs, because you're doing really, really important work. And I look forward to hearing back some. I expect from this some stories of transformation and some stories of renewal. So Dr. Damien, please stick around with me for a few minutes after I close out here. I'm Jonathan Rosent with Limitless, looking forward to a continued conversation with you.